Hello, it is time for another installment of Our Catholic Way on Breadbox Media. Thank you so much for listening. I'm your host, Kim Tizer. You're very breathy, congested, under the weather host. Oh, I'm so sorry that I sound like this, but you know, I don't feel all that bad. I just sound bad. So hopefully we'll still have a good time together. You know, I don't know about you, but I am really ready for this race for the president of the United States to be over. Are you? I mean, imagine a day with no more Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton memes filling your Facebook feed, or no more name smearing, and our blood pressure will all normalize. It's going to be a good day. And it's only a few weeks away, you know, the election. So I'm looking forward to that. Well, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, I found myself kind of embroiled in this Facebook discussion about the candidates. And I won't go into details. And I certainly won't go into politics. I try not to do that ever in radio. I do that on my Facebook page a little bit. But, you know, politics obviously can be very polarizing. And I don't want to do that. This show is about really bringing Catholics and Protestants together. You know, I hope and pray that I never come across that I'm bashing Protestants or my Southern Baptist upbringing, because I'm very thankful for it. And you might be a Protestant listening, and I'm hoping that this show will just at least help build a bridge, if nothing else. Certainly, I'd love for you to explore the Catholic faith more. That's probably why you're here. But if you end up not becoming Catholic, if you at least have a better understanding of what the church teaches, then I will feel like I've kind of done my part. But nonetheless, like I was saying yesterday, I found myself embroiled in this Facebook discussion about the candidates. And without trying to go into lots of details, it's so funny. I had to take a little break from all the messages that were flying back and forth. And I'm trying to open up my Bible here. I thought, I'm going to read my Bible. That's good, because you can't really say mean things if you just read your Bible. You know, it just doesn't work that way. And so I had it earmarked to the Wisdom of Solomon. Now, this is one of the books in the Bible that's part of the Deuterocanonical, I always say that wrong, the Deuterocanonical books. These are the books that you don't find in the Protestant Bible, because these have been stripped out. They were stripped out during the Reformation. But this is what I read. I'll just read part of it. It was earmarked for the Wisdom of Solomon, chapter 1. So I was just ready to start. And it says, "Love righteousness, you rulers of the earth. Think of the Lord with uprightness and seek him with sincerity of heart, because he is found by those who do not put him to the test and manifests himself to those who do not distrust him. For perverse thoughts separate men from God, and when his power is tested, it convicts the foolish. Because wisdom will not enter a deceitful soul, nor dwell in a body enslaved to sin. For a holy and disciplined spirit will flee from deceit, and will rise and depart from foolish thoughts, and will be ashamed at the approach of unrighteousness." And it goes on to say some really good, powerful things. As a matter of fact, I'm going to jump to the end here. It says, "But ungodly men, by their words and deeds, summoned death. Considering him a friend, they pined away, and they made a covenant with him, because they are fit to belong to this party." The party of death. We could call our political parties the parties of death if you want. Oh, that sounds horrible. I do support one party, but yeah, I'm just not real happy with anything this election. Not that much, to be honest, but it is almost over. And all I'll say, as political as I'll get, is we need to pray for those who are in power, who are seeking power, especially whoever enters office. We need to cover that person with prayer, whoever it is. And I failed to do that. And we know we're to pray for our leaders. We know that no matter what happens during this election, that God is going to allow whoever wins to be into power. And he can use whatever and whoever that is for good. I believe that because I believe God's word. But we have a responsibility as Christians to pray for our political leaders. So I'm going to try to do a better job of that. Well, I'll let you know, today's guest is Jennifer Longworth. She left Protestantism for Catholicism. She happens to be Breadbox Media's producer, so I better get this right. And I have to confess, I did pre-record this, so you won't have to listen to my stopped up nose throughout this whole interview. Be thankful. Again, thanks for listening. Let's proceed with our interview, okay?
Well, hey, Jennifer, thank you so much for being on Our Catholic Way. Are you ready for this?
We'll find out.
I know you are. You know, and I think I failed to mention in the intro that you are the executive producer of awesomeness at Breadbox Media. Why don't you tell us what that means? We know you're awesome, but what does that all mean? What do you do?
A little bit of everything. So people ask what I do. I'm like, oh, pick something, because I've probably done it. But I help edit podcasts. I help run live shows. I help program the schedule. I help keep the other producers on task. But I used to be on the air when we had a terrestrial station. I did more things, but not the production stuff. I don't know a little bit, but Mary Graham, who had a show for a while, she does our news, said, I want to put you on my website. What's your title? And I was like, oh, production director. And she's like, that is so lame. Give yourself a real title. So I was like, what about executive producer of awesomeness? She's like, boom, that works. So on Culture of Life Media, I was named that. I was like, well, you know what? I'm just going to stick with that everywhere.
It actually got me
on LinkedIn. Someone was like, oh, you're an executive producer. Awesome. Hey, come work for us on TV. I'm like, that's not really what I do.
But you are pretty doggone awesome. None of us would be heard on Breadbox Media, I know, if it weren't for you. And I just have to ask before we dive further into this interview, do you have any other hosts like me who write to say, help, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm lost. I mean, am I the only clueless one? Now's the time to be honest. Are you sure?
No way. Yes, I'm sure. No, I get that type of thing frequently, and it's not just you.
Oh,
I mean, especially when new folks come on, but still, people who've been doing it, who've been with us for over a year, I still get, help, what am I doing? Yeah, so it's totally not just you.
Oh, man, I feel so much better, because I thought, poor Jennifer, she must hate it every time she sees there's a message from me. Like, oh, it's Kim again. Okay. What does she need this time? So thank you. I feel so much better. Okay, well, you know what this show is all about. People come on and they share their conversion stories, sometimes their reverts. And I honestly thought you were a cradle Catholic. I don't know why, Jennifer. I must have thought you have the look. What that look is, I don't know. I just thought, you know, she's a cradle Catholic. So I was so surprised to hear that you're a convert. And I'm so excited to hear your story. And so I'm going to ask you to do what I ask others to do. And that's just to step back and tell us about your upbringing in terms of faith and, you know, what role that played in you and the lives of your family members.
Well, I'm a preacher's kid, actually. My dad was a Methodist pastor. So I was one of the good kind of preacher's kid, not one of the rebellious kind.
The good PK.
So, yeah, I was a PK, and I thought church was amazing. And, I mean, we did, at our smaller churches, we did Sunday morning, we did Sunday night, we did Wednesday night, and anything in between, because my mom had to play the piano, and they made me sing, and, you know, all that type of stuff. I don't recall ever having, like, faith conversations at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just part of who we were and what we did, you know?
Right. It's like you don't sit around talking about being American usually. I mean, you just are, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, I don't remember that type of conversation happening. I mean, maybe it did. I just don't remember. But I just thought having a dad who was a pastor was awesome and stuff.
Do you know enough about the Methodist Church to say how that may differ from other denominations, or, you know, what makes a Methodist a Methodist?
Kind of, yeah. And it's changed like everything else recently, but it's more liturgical than some of the other ones. I mean, becoming Catholic, a lot of things were still familiar. Well, my dad wrote a Bible school once called Seasons of Faith, and it went through, you know, Pentecost and Epiphany and Advent and Lent.
Wow, okay.
With the liturgical colors, which Catholics would totally recognize because they're the same.
Yeah.
So John Wesley was the founder of Methodism, and he was an Anglican who just had some spiritual experience and took it in a different direction. But the Anglican Church is just an offshoot of the Catholic Church, so the jump wasn't that big,
mm-hmm.
but they're a lot more liberal now. Maybe they've always been liberal. I just didn't know about that part. But.
Do they have an emphasis on social justice? Am I right on that? Or maybe it varies from church to church?
I mean, it varies from church to church, but they do not as much probably as you'll find in the Catholic Church. And it varies, but definitely involved.
Okay. So, you know, you said that you didn't sit around talking about faith so much. I mean, it was just an integral part of who you guys were as a family, with your dad being a pastor. Do you recall anyone ever talking about the Catholic Church at all, good or bad?
I thought the Protestant Reformation was fascinating. I learned about that in middle school and in school, and I was like, wow. Those Catholics had it messed up. It's so good that Martin Luther did this thing, shaped it up, and that's just amazing. But, you know, and every day I knew a few Catholics. I didn't know many. I'm in Kentucky, which is a Bible Belt, so we're not heavily Catholic around here. So I knew a few here and there. I knew priests didn't get married because when I moved somewhere, my friend always introduced me as the priest's daughter, and I'm like, that's not right. I'm pretty sure that's not right. But then, you know, growing up, I would listen to things and read things and then get invited to things that would totally be anti-Catholic. You know, the Pope is the Antichrist, the Whore of Babylon, you know, all that. So I was exposed to that. That's more like high school and young adulthood, being exposed to that teaching. I don't recall how much of it I bought into, but I was at least like, huh, that's interesting.
Now, I'm curious, because you said that you all discussed the Reformation in school. Did you go to a Christian school, or was that discussed in a public school?
It was a private school, but we were studying that time period. And okay. You can't study the 1500s without the Reformation coming up.
Okay. Well, you know, we may have discussed that somewhat, come to think of it, in public school. I may have slept through it. I'm not sure. But I do recall that it did come up at some point. Okay. So you didn't have, like, major negative thoughts toward the Catholic Church. I'm just going to jump probably way ahead and ask, at what point did you become interested at all in the Catholic Church? I'm curious as to how that even happened.
Okay, so I'm married to a cradle Catholic.
Okay.
But he was as people call it, a lapsed Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were dating and got married, it's like, oh, you're raised Catholic. It's one of those, oh, you're raised Catholic, bless your heart, I need to lead you to salvation type thing. You know, that. I mean, I guess that's one of the evangelical perspectives of the Catholic Church is like, oh, you're raised Catholic? That must mean you don't really have faith.
He was probably an easy target, too. I mean, at least he wasn't an active Catholic. That would have been a little bit more challenging.
Jesus, Kim.
I know.
I gave him Jesus. That's like, that's the way it is. So, anyway, but we were married in 98, and you know, he just came to the Methodist Church with me, because that's what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad died in 2006, so that kind of took the Methodist obligation. I don't know, our whole family kind of went in different directions, my mom and sisters, after that. And we were still going to the Methodist Church, but when Pope Benedict was elected, my husband started drifting back towards the Catholic Church. And he'd start bringing up weird stuff in Sunday school and quoting saints. And like, what is this?
And people were giving him stink eye. And
people were getting confused. They were like, what is Bill talking about? What did he really think? I'm like, I don't know. Then I get in the car and there was this radio station on, this Catholic radio on in the car. I'm like, what is this? And I would change the channel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then get back in, and I'm like, oh, the Catholic invasion is on again. What? This is crazy. Change the channel.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so on. And finally, like, okay, let me listen to this stuff. Like, huh. Well, that kind of makes sense.
They almost sound Christian. I remember having that thought listening to Catholic radio. Wow, they sound really Christian. What's up with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. And that's what I thought when... I really like Good Friday services. Even in the Methodist Church, we did Good Friday services. And one year, our church wasn't doing it because they were alternating. This year, we'll do Good Friday. Next year, we'll do Holy Thursday. This year, we'll do Good Friday. Next year, we'll do Holy Thursday. Whatever. And so there was no Good Friday service that year. And my husband's like, hey, you want to go to Mary Queen, which is right down the street, the Catholic Church? I'm like, okay, let's go. And the homily was very Christian. They talked about Jesus dying on the cross for our sins and all sorts of crazy stuff Catholics weren't supposed to believe. I'm like, wait a minute.
They read from a Bible. Christian. They read Bible verses. They didn't make it up.
So weird. So that was kind of, the veneration of the cross was very weird for me. I'm like, that is very strange. Okay. Well, show up late, leave early. We are here. So that was interesting. But one of the things that got me too was we were doing a women in the Bible study for our Sunday school class, and in this class people took turns teaching and whatever, and I got the chapter on Mary.
Well,
I mean, in this book, which was, you know, probably put out by the Methodist Publishing Company, they didn't talk the Catholic side of Mary, of course, but right. I like to do my research. And if I'm going to teach on Mary, I'm going to do this right. And if you start researching Mary, guess where you end up? And so I'm reading about this Immaculate Conception thing. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's about Mary. I'd never heard that before. And I'm talking to my friend on the phone. I'm like, did you know that the Immaculate Conception is about Mary? That is so cool. And
then, about Mary,
you know,
being conceived without sin, right? I mean, for those who are listening who may be wondering, well, what is that? I'm not quite sure. So a lot, even some Catholics get confused and think it has to do with Jesus, but it's really about Mary. But anyway, I digress. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Oh, no, I'm glad you did that. And then this Catholic radio station I was listening to, and then, you know, starting to ask questions, and then, you know, and then our Methodist church was making some decisions we weren't keen on. I mean, locally and globally, and going, you know what, I don't think I belong here. Let me check out other things. And I went to a little independent fundamental Baptist church in my neighborhood for a month or so. And they diss the Methodists a couple times. I'm like, oh, no. I'm sure they diss the Catholics too, but I don't remember. Mm-hmm. So we tried that. I'm like, yeah, this isn't exactly right, but no, I'm not Methodist. And then, I don't know, it just kind of all fell in there. And we started sneaking to the Catholic church on the weekend. So we go, I was a song leader at the early service at church, so I couldn't not go on Sunday mornings. But we'd go to Saturday Mass, kind of hang out, and then go to Sunday church, and Saturday Mass, and Sunday church. Yeah, eventually, it was like, okay. And I had commitments in the Methodist church, so I could not go until I had fulfilled my commitment, because they're like, well, you can't do this if you're not going to the Methodist church. I'm like, okay.
Well, obviously, then you did have to, I guess you did tell a few people that you were going somewhat to the Catholic Church. Were most kind of, was their attitude, well, hey, whatever floats your boat, if that makes you happy, or?
I got the weirdest look from a girl, because I said, and she was studying to become a Methodist pastor, and she is a Methodist minister now, and I told her, like, I think God wants me to be Catholic. And she looked at me as if I had just come in on the crazy train or something. She's like, okay, that's true.
You know, I'm going to jump back a minute, because when you were talking about learning about Mary and the Immaculate Conception being about her, and you thought that was kind of a wild, crazy thing, did it cause you to have issues with the Catholic Church? I mean, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds as if maybe you were pretty accepting once you realized what it was. I don't know. I'm just trying to get a good feel for that, because for a lot of people, Mary is a major hang-up when looking at the Catholic Church.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole Mary is our mother, she's queen. You know, Catholics don't worship Mary. What? No, they totally, you know, because that's one of the huge misconceptions about us, is that we worship Mary. Well, no, we honor her. Why do we pray to her? I don't get it. But what made it make sense for me, and maybe this will help someone else too, and I think this was probably in a Scott Hahn book, because we read lots of those. You know, in the church. But in, let me find, 1 Kings chapter 2, well, Solomon had how many wives and concubines? Yeah, lots and lots and lots.
Right.
So when you're king and you have that many women, who gets to be queen?
Mama.
Your mama.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, okay. So Bathsheba's queen. I get it. And some of the people went to her and said, hey, can you mention to Solomon that we kind of need something? And she did. And she went to him. And he's like, okay, ask my mother, for I will not refuse you. I mean, that's what he said. So I was like, well, when Mary goes to Jesus, he's like, okay, Mom, what do you want? So that's why we should go to her as our intercessor. So this was a, you know, prophetic type or whatever you want to call it. And she's like, hey, I have a request. And he says, okay, shoot. So that kind of went, oh, I learned about prophetic types and stuff. I mean, I went to Bible studies. I listened to Christian radio, all that type of stuff. So that really... resonated when that clicked.
I know. When I understood that the mother in the Old Testament, the mother was queen, not the wife. That's kind of like our modern idea of who the queen is. But it was really the mother of the king. And she just took the petitions to her son. It was still the son in charge. She didn't usurp his authority. But she just brought those petitions to him. And that's kind of how Mary works, you know, and she points people to her son. Once I understood her role in that sense, it was so much easier to accept Mary as my mother. And I still have a lot to learn in terms of that, but, you know, it helped me get over that hurdle. So I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was huge for me. Now, Jennifer, hopefully I'm not jumping too far ahead, but do I understand that the saints also had a role in you becoming Catholic or wanting to be Catholic? Because I know we had kind of Facebooked each other back and forth with some information. Did you have any hangups there initially with the communion of saints and the idea of praying to saints in heaven?
Yeah. So in the Methodist Church, we decided the Apostles' Creed. Basically the same thing, including we believe in the communion of saints. But I understood that to be everyone hanging out together. You know, here on earth, we are, you know, saints on earth, and we are a community.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what not really taught, but that's kind of what, you know, I got. Oh, and it was always Holy Catholic Church, Catholic Little C, universal.
Mm-hmm. And I can understand that confusion, too, because, I mean, the Bible does refer to saints as those who are Christ's followers here on earth, right? So you could easily make that assumption. But anyway, go ahead, Madame.
So that's what it was. And then, you know, Catholics, you know, I pray to dead people. What? You know, this is nuts. And the icon thing, because... you know, the Ten Commandments are, you know, numbered differently in the Protestant Church versus Catholic Church. And oh, no graven images. What is all this statue stuff? This is crazy. And it was Catholic radio that kind of cleared a lot of it up for me. First of all, you don't cease to be a member of the body of Christ just because you die.
Right.
Duh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not like once you're dead, you're dead. You're no longer a Christian because you're dead. No, wait. Yeah. So that kind of clicked. And I remember trying to tell that to some Baptist woman. She looked at me like I had three heads. but then the icon thing, like, I just don't know. So I'm taking my children to Methodist Bible school, listening to Catholic radio, and the host said, you know, basically explain that having icons is just like having a picture of your grandmother on your nightstand.
Right. And I don't know too many people that worship pictures in their home. You know, they're not worshiping the pictures. They're reminders of those that we love.
Yes.
In a nutshell.
So that was like, that totally clicked. I was sitting there in my car and heard that. Oh, yeah, because I wouldn't, if I was going to, you know, miss my dad or my grandmother or whatever, I would, you're talking to the picture, but I know the picture is not them.
Right.
You know, it's like, I miss you, you know, because people do that. But that doesn't mean I'm worshiping this picture, you know, this image. I'm just remembering my loved ones who've come before. So that made sense. Just remembering the look on that lady's face in our very evangelical homeschool group, when I told her all this, and she's like, oh, okay. You're becoming Catholic. You are weird.
But, you know, I know of Protestants who, when they're, you know, they're against the idea of praying to people in heaven until they have a close loved one die.
Mm.
And then it's, and they may be reluctant, but I've heard them say, you know, they'll be like, hey, Dad, well, if you're listening, if you're up there, I just want you to know I miss you. I want you to know I love you. I want, you know what I mean? I think a natural thing to still want to communicate with our loved ones. And my thing is, you know, when people die, if they were Christians and they go to heaven, if they're in the presence of God, they are more fully alive in Christ than they ever were when they walked this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we have this cloud of witnesses. I've forgotten where that is. You know, I should have my Bible right here.
Hebrews.
Thank you. That pray for us, right? So to me, it makes sense that they understand what is going on this earth, that they're rooting us on, that they're praying for us. And that's really biblical. So it really makes sense, but I never saw it before for whatever reason. So you didn't have an issue then after that. You started warming up to that idea. Did you have a hard time picking a patron saint?
My patron saint is St. Jean Francis de Chantal.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I basically just read some stories of the saints, and I liked her story, and I rolled with that. So that's how I picked one.
And do you mind sharing for someone who doesn't know what a patron saint is? Because I had someone ask me that on my Facebook page once. Well, I don't even know what that is. Do you mind just sharing briefly what a patron saint is?
Well, you're encouraged to choose one when you're confirmed. So it's like, okay, well, I need to pick a saint. But it's a saint that you have a special relationship with, I guess. You know, we all have people in our lives here on earth that we consider, you know, closer friends than others,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe besties even. So your patron saint's like your bestie saint. You know, it's like, well, there you go. So my daughter chose Saint Philomena. She really likes her. She loves her. She liked her story. She likes how bold she was. And it's also someone you can model your life after.
Right.
St. Jane Frances lost her husband in a hunting accident, and then she got kind of depressed, and then she got older and was like, hey, I want to become a nun. And they're like, you're too old. She's like, yeah, right. So she founded an order for, I guess, women who wouldn't necessarily be accepted by other orders because of age or whatever. So that's, you know, somebody to model your life after as well.
Good point. Yeah, it does make sense. And, you know, there are patron saints for different causes and in some cases illnesses and whatnot based on the lives that they had on earth. And, you know, it's just like I think if you're on here on earth and you're having, say, marital problems, you're probably going to go to the friend, not the single one, but the one who has maybe been married for a while, who has gone through maybe similar circumstances. You know, if you're having a parenting issue and you want prayer, you're going to go to the friend who has children, probably not the one who doesn't have any, because they can more closely relate to what it is you're going through. So in the same way, we tend to go to saints, ask for their prayer. We don't believe that they're answering the prayers, but they take our petitions to God. So we go to those who may have gone through something similar in their lifetime. And like you said, Jennifer, they're role models for us to show us how to live. And I tell you, we need role models today. So we need to look to the saints. Is it hard teaching your kids, like once you became Catholic, I'm jumping too far ahead. So tell me when you decided to become Catholic, and was it a hard decision? Did you have any objections still once you made the decision? Those are lots of questions thrown at you at once.
Well, I got through RCIA, the catechism classes, the Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults, in 4 months because I figured it out by reading and listening and yeah, figured it out. Right. Anyway.
You felt probably at the time. I know I did. Like, yeah. I'm ready. Let me in.
I know. That's everything about the Catholic Church now. I felt like I knew more than the catechist in class a couple times just because I'd immersed myself in it to learn. And I had a great sponsor who walked with me during the process. So when I was ready to come in, I was ready to come in. But when you are accepted in the church, there was only two of us coming in that day. And I had to stand up in front of the whole congregation, Mary Queen of the Holy Rosary, and say, I believe everything the Catholic Church teaches, or whatever it is. That moment for me lasted forever. Because I was like, once I say this, no going back.
It's like getting married.
So, yeah.
Like saying, I do. Yeah, like, yeah. I better really mean this.
I was so nervous that day. I was so nervous. I mean, that moment probably didn't last any longer than a typical breath. But for me, seeing it on the page, knowing I was about to say that, and then, like, you know, that was that.
Did you have any lingering doubts, though? Even when you went forward, were there any doubts at all?
No, I don't think so. But at that point, I felt like God was calling me to do that. I mean, I prayed at the altar at the Methodist church. God, you want me to be Catholic? I mean, I spent time outside of a church. There's a church locally that has a nice garden outside of its sanctuary. So I spent time in the garden. I'm like, God, do you want me to be Catholic? And it was kind of like, yes. Yes, I do. Come on, just do it.
Yeah.
So by that, I kind of knew what I was doing and went in. And so not really.
Okay, that's good. Because I must admit, I still, it's like I was 99.9% sure that it was the right thing. But it was kind of like when I was getting married, too. I don't know if right. I'm just naturally skeptical or what. Like, what if? What? Okay, Lord, could I be making a mistake here? You know, I still had questions about purgatory that weren't quite answered. It's like I would read about it and go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense. But then when I would start thinking about it, I'd go, well, I don't know. And I don't know that I could really explain that. So maybe I'm confused, you know. But I was convinced that the Catholic Church was the church that Christ founded. So in my heart, even though I had some lingering questions, I still was convinced enough that the Lord would eventually show me, you know, or help me understand any questions that I still had, you know, that it would eventually all fall into place. And like you, I felt called. I mean, there was no way I could not do it. Yeah, you know, I was convinced that I needed to move forward. And honestly, at that point, there was no going back either, because I felt like there was no place to go to. If I didn't become Catholic, I had already researched all the denominations in hopes that I could find something else to go to. Like, oh, Lord, you really don't want me to be Catholic. Maybe Lutheran would suffice. That's kind of close. Or, you know, but I researched these denominations and I thought, no, you know, I can't, for, you know, various reasons. Either there were teachings that they had adopted that I didn't think were biblical. So forward I went, and I have no regrets that I made that decision. And I'm still learning. And that's why I do this show, to kind of to help me learn. How hard, this is what I wanted to ask you earlier, but how hard has it been for your kids to make the adjustment? Or were they pretty young when you entered the church?
They were pretty young. I mean, like first and second grade was about how old they were.
Oh, okay.
And they didn't really have any input at all, because when you're 6 and 7 years old or whatever, you do what your parents tell you. So it wasn't like, children, we're going to have a discussion about being Catholic. It was like, oh, we're going to Catholic Church now, so that's what you're doing. And I didn't know what their reaction was till later. And I think I found a letter my daughter had wrote, or a journal entry, my older daughter, which was basically, I'm not really thrilled about this decision.
Oh.
I miss my old church. I didn't want to leave my old church. She's very sentimental. She doesn't even like it when we move houses. Because that was home. Wait, why are we moving? You know, it's just a house. But, you know, with the church, oh, no, I don't, you know. But thinking about what they did with the children at our Methodist church, is they had, you know, a children's church.
Mm-hmm.
Kids did not go to a big church. I mean, you just kept them separate, which is totally different than Catholic church, where there's kids running around everywhere. But they went to their own little kids worship service, whatever thing, and, quote, communion there was, I kid you not, of course, grape juice or grape Kool-Aid and goldfish crackers.
That was communion?
Yes.
Oh, well, I've heard on the journey home that the youth led at one church the communion service, and they had Doritos and, I don't know, Dr. Pepper or Coke.
Oh my
or
gosh,
something.
That's awful. That's worse than goldfish crackers. At a Methodist camp once, I had grape Kool-Aid and hot dog buns. So
at least you could say the goldfish crackers are symbolic of the story of Jonah and the whale. And
I was thinking that the multiplication of the fish and loaves.
There you go.
That works. Yeah, I mean, you can work a fish biblical fish reference in there lots of places.
That you could. But yeah. Oh, man. But, you know, for my kids, it was the same thing when we left. All we heard about for, I don't know, at least the first 6 months is, I miss my old church. And mm-hmm. I admit, their church, the Baptist church, made kids' church fun. I mean, yeah. they looked yeah. forward to going to it. And, you know, in the Catholic church, the emphasis is not on having fun. And I'm okay with that. You know, it's on reverence and worshiping mm-hmm. God. It's on our holiness. And so there's not a lot of fun factor often. So it can be hard, especially when kids are older. But, you know, but now mine are used to it. But like you, I mean, my kids never liked change. Probably most don't. Right. You know, when we've had to change schools, they didn't like it. When they stopped going to school right. and we homeschooled, they didn't like it. And they just have to get used to it. It takes time sometimes.
Yeah. And since my kids are 6 and 7, that age, Maybe Nalia was a little bit younger. Maybe she was 5. I don't remember. But she was still toting a blanket at that point and wouldn't always bring it places. She was so distraught about going to Mass. It's like, yes, you can bring your blanket. So she would bring her blanket. But then they were about the age for First Reconciliation and then First Communion. So it kind of got right in that not too long after we'd been there and, you know, put them in the formation classes and all this because as a Methodist, you went to Sunday school. I mean, that's what you did. So, kids, you're in Sunday school, but we don't call it that here. Mm-hmm. And then since we homeschooled after we made the transition, you know, we started using Catholic curriculum and stuff and teaching the rosary at home and whatnot. And now they're 14 and almost 16 years old. So Rebecca had confirmation this past May, and Nalia will have confirmation this coming May.
Very cool. Well, is there a teaching that has become a favorite, a Catholic teaching that you didn't have before as a Methodist?
Oh, Mary, Queen of Heaven. That's easy. I was like asking you, when people ask, what's your favorite mystery of the rosary? I'm like, oh, the Mary's crowned Queen of Heaven. That's just awesome. I love that.
Do you want to expound and share exactly what that is?
Well, it's like what I talked about before, about Bathsheba being queen and going to Solomon with her petitions. But, the whole Mary, when her earthly life ended, she was assumed body and soul into heaven. And because she was immaculately conceived, she didn't have to suffer a punishment of death like the rest of us. So she just got to go to heaven, which is awesome, because the wages of sin is death, but she didn't sin, so boom.
It's so funny because Protestants will have maybe issue with that. But I mean, that's really nothing totally foreign. We see that in the Old Testament with Elijah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, God's done it before. He can do it, you know.
One of the reasons that the Protestants would get hung up on that is because they don't believe in the Immaculate Conception. So those two things kind of work together.
Right.
And you mentioned the purgatory teaching before, and I just thought I'd jump in and explain how that ended up making sense.
Well, you know, this is an interesting discussion. This came up in a recent discussion with Scott Richert, who is a Catholicism expert, and he's going to come back on very soon to discuss purgatory in detail. So, Jennifer, is there anything that you would want to add to the discussion today before I let you go? Maybe even a piece of advice for someone who's looking at the Catholic Church thinking, I think maybe God's calling me there.
Well, if you feel called, you need to go. Definitely move that. But to learn it. And one of the things about the Catholic Church, once I started learning more, is this makes more sense than anything I've ever looked into before. The Catholic Church makes sense. So some people have like a experience of the heart changing or whatever, or, you know, a feeling. But my confession was partly intellectual because the Catholic Church makes sense. Like, oh, well, that's logical. Mm-hmm. Well, why doesn't everyone think that? This makes more sense. Like Mary being immaculately conceived because she was going to bear the Son of God. Well, you don't want to put God in a dirty vessel or whatever. She's got to be clean. Oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And so just the logic that seems to, I don't know, not be the right word, but that's kind of what I mean. It just makes sense.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of like, in my mind, I think it's how the Catholic Church approaches reading the scriptures. We don't take verses out of context. You need to know what it means, like within the passage, within the chapter, within the book, within the, you know, Old or New Testament, within the whole Bible. So you read it in its entirety. And I think it's the same way with the Catholic Church as you look at it. Don't look at one little teaching. You know, yes, study each one. But like you said, so many are kind of interconnected. Yeah. You understand Mary's Assumption if you understand her Immaculate Conception. So you kind of need to understand it as a whole. And that may take time. And that's okay. Uh-huh. To study and pray that the Lord will reveal to you the truth of the Catholic Church. Jennifer Longworth, thank you so much for being on Our Catholic Way on Breadbox Media today. I appreciate it so much.
Well, thanks for having me, Kim.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed hearing Jennifer's story as much as I did. She just sounds like she'd be every single person's friend, doesn't she? That's what I like about Jennifer. Not to mention she's talented, but I'm so thankful she shared her story. You know, since the topic of the Reformation came up, I'll let you know, I am no Reformation history buff or expert. I'm not an expert in anything, sadly, but I really wanted to find some resources that I could point you toward if you wanted to read more about the Reformation yourself. And of course, there's a lot from a Protestant standpoint. I had a hard time finding much, but this is what I came across. First off, The Apostasy That Wasn't, The Extraordinary Story of the Unbreakable Early Church. That's written by Rod Bennett, who is a convert to the Catholic faith, as well as one of our Breadbox Media hosts, Charles Coughlin. He recommended The Fathers Know Best by Jimmy Akin, and I know I've heard of that. I don't think it's about the Reformation per se, but it does lay the groundwork, from what I understand, for the early church, and shows what it was really like based on more than 900 quotations from the writings of the early church fathers, as well as from rare and important documents dating back to the dawn of Christian history. It also contains many biographies of nearly 100 fathers, as well as descriptions of dozens of key early councils and writings, and takes a closer look at the heresies that existed then. So you just get a real solid sense of what the early church was like. Was it a church that was just ready to crumble and fall apart? You know, you can read and decide for yourself. And one other resource I will throw out, it's pretty exhaustive. It can be a little heavy to read, I think, but it would be readily available to you. You could go right now, and that is to go to newadvent.org, which has a gazillion Catholic articles. It will tell you everything you want to know about the Catholic Church. Just go to newadvent.org, and I'm going to include the link in the show notes, and it'll take you to the section on the Reformation. Let's see what I want to share before we go. Oh, if you're listening on Saturday, October 15th, today's saint of the day is Teresa of Avila. And I'm probably butchering her name because I butcher all names. But I think her story is a fascinating one. Less than 20 years before she was born in the year 1515, Christopher Columbus opened up the Western Hemisphere to European colonization. And we just had Columbus Day. And then 2 years after she was born, Martin Luther started the Protestant Reformation. See how all of this just kind of comes together, kind of fits together like this puzzle. And if you're curious, she is the patron of headache sufferers and Catholic writers. So you may want to read up more on her. And in honor of her, if I feel up to it, if I feel well enough to get to the grocery store, because I need to go to the store, we plan on making St. Teresa's bread. Calls for a cinnamon stick, lemon peel, 12 slices of French bread, essentially, oh, and some eggs. It's like a fancy French toast. Who doesn't like that? And there's another recipe in this book I'm looking at, St. Teresa's Egg Yolks. That doesn't sound nearly as appetizing. But it comes from this book called A Continual Feast, a cookbook to celebrate the joys of family and faith throughout the Christian year. And I ordered this a couple years ago. I love this book. And it doesn't have a lot of beautiful pictures in it, and almost all of my cookbooks do, but I cherish this book. And I'm going to include this in my show notes as well, because you may want to look at this. This takes you through the whole liturgical year with recipes that coincide with different holidays and feast days. And anyway, I cherish this, and I'm sure you would too if you had a copy, A Continual Feast. Next week, I hope you will check back. We plan to talk to Carrie Donaldson. She is a homesteader, a homeschooler, and just a fascinating person whose faith journey I know took her all over the map because she was really seeking God. And I know that she has a devotion to the holy souls in purgatory. And so it just seems really fitting that we will talk to her as we get closer to All Souls Day, All Saints Day, Halloween. All of that's coming up soon. So I hope you'll tune in for that. Should be a good show. As always, thank you for listening to Our Catholic Way. Check out some of the other shows on Breadbox Media. And if you ever want to find me, you can on Facebook. Look for Our Catholic Way. You can send me a message that way. You could go to ourcatholicway@gmail.com. I hope you'll find the show on iTunes, or you can listen directly from Breadbox Media. What else? And don't forget the phone number. No one's using it, y'all. Makes me feel bad. The phone the phone number is 731, the number 4, Our Way. 731-4 Our Way. Call and just let me know what you think of the show. I'd love to hear from you. And I guess that's it. Again, I'm Kim Tizer. I hope you have a blessed week. Take care. Bye-bye.